Hi, I'm Brian Burke, Chief MacMan at SellYourMac.com, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. There are some incredible things happening with the Startup Story podcast, and I cannot wait to share them with you when the time is right. We're finalizing a fall lineup of founders that will blow you away, and we are even trying to piece together a live event that will deliver a tremendous amount of value to you. The Startup Story is about creating an environment where entrepreneurs help other entrepreneurs, and one of the best ways to do so is to get in the same room together with each other as entrepreneurs. I'll have more details on this as we get them squared away. In the meantime, if you have thoughts on how I can best serve you, please do not hesitate to reach out to me directly on Instagram at The Startup Story or on LinkedIn. Simply just search for The Startup Story. I want to serve you best, so please reach out to me and let me know how. And I hope you'll consider contributing to the growth of the Startup Story by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Those reviews really matter for the Apple Podcast algorithm. So if you wouldn't mind leaving a review, that'd be greatly helpful. And also, if you have a product or service that would be of value to an entrepreneurial audience, please visit thestartupstory.co/advertise. Again, thestartupstory.co/advertise. Now, let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is Brian Burke, founder of SellYourMac.com. SellYourMac.com is a way for you to sell your Apple products in a way that ensures you receive top dollar. Brian extends an incredible offer to you, the Startup Story listener, at the end of this episode, so make sure you listen all the way through. I connected with Brian because of his nomination as an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. EY is one of the largest firms in the world, and seeing Brian's firm nominated by such a prestigious firm definitely gave me cause to pursue him to unpack his story. SellYourMac.com has a very grassroots storyline to it, and I love that we get to unpack it in its entirety because it helps us understand what it's like to grow a business without investment capital. Even more so, it allows us to see what it's like to start up a business that is so cash flow dependent, and how do you recover from a situation that steals 5 years of profits from you? Brian's story will truly encourage you as you seek to start up your entrepreneurial journey or give you enough strength to continue on if you're already running your own business. Brian's entrepreneurial journey towards SellYourMac.com had very clear indicators from his early childhood that SellYourMac.com was going to be his destiny. But I will let him share it all with you and allow you to connect the dots.
No one in my family has ever been an entrepreneur. I will say my dad did split off from his hospital practice and started his own business. It's not a traditional entrepreneurship journey for him just because having a doctor practice in general, I don't think, you know, you don't have the control of an entrepreneur to, you know, grow it and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of just continuing what he was doing for his current patients. I always modeled my work ethic as an entrepreneur off my dad because he's worked so hard his entire life to give back to all the kids that he's helped and still be there for the family and stuff like that. So they set me on a good path. You know, when I was young, I had everything I always wanted and I had time to not start a business necessarily, but just time to tinker. And I, you know, I was always like kind of building things that I could sell. In the very, very early days, it was lanyards that I made at camp. And, you know, I would hawk these lanyards on the sidewalk of my neighborhood, you know, for $5 a piece or, you know, whatever I could get for them. And then that slowly turned into making and selling jewelry. And this is probably back in elementary school, fourth and fifth grade. I'd go to the local bead shop. I'd be buying all these, you know, different earrings and, you know, necklaces and buying all the beads and putting them together and selling those in school and on the street. And, you know, it wasn't a glamorous income, but definitely just kind of the idea of, you know, learning how to sell something and how to talk to people. And I think that kind of set myself up to, you know, be the salesman that I am today. And I have never had a problem, you know, talking to anyone. Yeah. So developing the skills early on to not be shy and go up and confront people and try to sell them something, I think is, you know, very key to the entrepreneur journey.
That is awesome. I have to ask though, because I love the elementary and middle school hustle. Like I love the, you know, the bubble, I call them the bubblegum hustlers, right? Where we take that milk money, go buy a pack of gum and sell each piece for a dollar and just kind of upsell. But in those eras, and everyone has a different approach to it, but for you in these friendship bracelets, these bead bracelets, as well, were you just at school selling these, or were you going door to door? I mean, how hard was the hustle?
So I think the bulk of my sales are probably on the sidewalk in front of my house. And our neighborhood had about 350 homes. My house was, you know, towards the start of the neighborhood, so a lot of people had to drive by it. And, you know, there's just people walking around the streets in the summer, and I was just selling them there. You know, I'm probably spending $2-3 on the beads and selling them for, you know, $10-20.
That is amazing that so at good a young margins. Age we're selling for 10 or 20. That is great margin. You understood margin at a young age, and I love that.
But they actually, like, looked nice. People said, you know, these are good-looking earrings. You know, I don't know why I had an affinity to make these things. I think I almost just stumbled into it. Like, I have a lot of things in my life, and it worked out, so I kept going.
That is awesome. I love that. So as we come to the end of high school, we all have an idea of what we want to become. Well, let's say we don't all have it, but we have a leaning towards our what do we want for a career, right? You were raised by a doctor, so I assume that...
I never wanted to be a doctor.
Right, and we tend to either lean towards our parents, or we're like, no, I don't want to do that at all.
Yeah, far away. Yeah. I would never take over his practice. I actually wanted to be a stock trader. I had an affinity for trading stocks and arbitrage sales. I even won some stock trading contests while I was in high school, and I made a good amount of money trading off my bar mitzvah funds. And I think in about 3 or 4 years, I grew my $2,000 for my bar mitzvah up to about $15,000.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that was going pretty well. And I was like, oh, I should do this for a living. You know, I understand the concept of, you know, going against kind of the market. When people think it's the time to buy, when it's red hot, that's when you sell. Like, and you have to kind of put those processes in place. And also just following stock news was always of great interest to me. I loved reading about technology. So that was fun. But I never got the stock job.
But in high school, see, this is why I love the startup story, is all these breadcrumbs of life that we can see patterns of, right? And you talk about, you know, arbitrage sales and commodities were part of your story very early on. It was always retail sales. It was exchange. It was a transactional exchange of, I want to give this, I want to make this. I mean, granted, stocks are a little bit different, but there's still the same premise in it. But how did you in high school... Because most people are not. I mean, you may take a math class and hear about the power of compound interest, but most high schoolers have no awareness of the power of the market. Who or how did you come across the market at such a young age?
I think I started reading about Jim Cramer.
Oh, there you go. Mad Money.
Yeah. This is pre-Mad Money.
Okay.
You know, I think the initial book was called The Life of a Street Addict. And it was talking about how he started, and he was trading on paper for a while, just learning how to do it. And then he kind of got his knack during college, working with some of his professors, and started trading oil and making a bunch of money, even while he was basically homeless in his car. And it was just a very powerful story, and it seemed like a potential to live your own life and on your own terms. And I was like, if you're a stock trader, you could be anywhere in the world. And that was definitely intriguing to me.
Oh, that is awesome. That is incredible. So high school comes to an end. What's your next step? Again, you're raised by a doctor. My assumption is college was not an option. It was almost mandatory, but I mean, I could be wrong. So what was your next step outside?
I would say it was pretty mandatory. If I didn't want to go to college, I think my parents would have been pretty upset. Fortunately, I got almost a full ride to Tulane University. So I went there to continue my studies, and it wasn't an unbelievable academic experience. But, you know, from the standpoint of building my network and lifelong friends, that was certainly huge for me.
Yeah.
My senior year of college, when Hurricane Katrina hit and we all got displaced, and I ended up going up to Boston University first semester of senior year. And it was interesting because I was a full-time student, but the one right I was not granted was to meet with any of the recruiters on campus. And I even went so far as petitioning the president of the university, and he said it was a scarce resource only for full-time students.
Wow.
I said, yes, I am a full-time student, according to your records. And it was some weird situation of the way they let us in that did not qualify me for that. And so I didn't meet with any of these, you know, finance recruiters I really wanted to talk to. And when we went back to Tulane second semester, you know, about 90% of people came back, but the city was under military control. It was a little bit scary down there at the time of how much, you know, damage and stuff was going on. And none of the recruiters came down second semester. They all canceled their visits.
Wow.
So it was kind of on me to, you know, outreach from there to see if I could get a job. And I spent countless hours applying for jobs online. I really wanted to work at a big investment bank or a hedge fund. And I did get a lot of interviews up there, but didn't get the big jobs I wanted. And it seemed like one of the pitfalls was not going to Ivy League school. They immediately thought of Tulane, like how could this kid be better than the Harvard or Brown or Princeton student, and kind of never got the trial that I wanted to at one of these companies. And that kind of forced my hand to start my own business.
That is amazing. And I want to unpack that education piece just a bit for some of our listeners. I know we have some business school listeners. I know we have some, even some high school listeners that have hit me up on Instagram, letting me know about some of the startups they're working on. So I know we have people that are in that world, and we maybe have some, you know, 9-to-5 employees that are contemplating going back to school because they think that that is a trajectory in order to better their life. And I'm not going to disparage higher education, but one of the things that I think your story reveals, and for anyone who's been listening to the Startup Story, you know my thoughts on college, that if you do go, it's all about leveraging the network. Your time at Boston College, I think, speaks to it. You know, them not letting you speak to the recruiters because you were a Tulane transplant for a period of time because of Katrina. They knew their commodity. They knew what was hot for them, and that was their network, the recruiters that came on campus. That is what universities have nowadays, period. I've seen too many people that got into MIT and decided not to go to MIT, and they went to some local, you know, state level university. So it is not the caliber of the people per se. It is the alumni base, the network, and the brands that will come to those universities because of how the universities have marketed themselves in it. I mean, here you are with a successful business, couldn't get a look on a Boston University recruiter base because you were not a Boston University.
Yeah, it was pretty upsetting.
Yeah, but you took the bull by the horn, so to speak, and that's where the entrepreneurial journey began. But my question is, was Sell Your Mac what birthed out of that experience, or was there another startup at that point in time?
So Sell Your Mac didn't come about for a couple more years.
Okay. So what was that startup then?
So senior year, I was already buying and selling a lot of people's cell phones and other, you know, random electronics, whether it be their, you know, game systems or TVs. And it, you know, it kind of started because people didn't want to spend any of their time to sell their own items and get their cash back. So I would offer to do it on, you know, commission or just make them an offer. And that kind of quickly spread around to all the, you know, fraternities and sororities that they knew I was the phone guy. So I would just show up, you know, at a sorority meeting and collect like 30, 40 phones from the girls, and just, you know, you're handing them, you know, $10 a piece, and then you're going on eBay and sell them for, you know, 60, 70 bucks.
That is odd. What year was this? Let's put a timestamp on that so the listeners know what kind of phones we're talking about.
This would be 2005.
So before the iPhone. So we're talking
this
the
is
Motorola
like
Razor, right?
Yeah, a lot of Razors. These were hot.
That's awesome. Is my assumption that you were selling these on eBay or another platform?
It was. No, I started my eBay account back in 2000. My initial hot items I was selling were Audi car parts. And I was super into Audi at the time, and I could buy them on these forums and sell them on eBay for a pretty hefty profit.
Oh my gosh, I love this. The fact that you have an eBay background is super compelling, because I truly believe in today's day and age that whether you're bootstrapping a startup, whether you are struggling financially, if you want to make money, there are ways to make money.
Absolutely.
And I think right now, for all those listening, you know, reach out to Brian Burke. I mean, he's got a dozen different ways on his journey is taken on how to make money. And I think,
I would tell your listeners, you know, find something you're passionate about and figure out how to buy them at a discount and resell them on eBay. There's just so much opportunity on there. Not everyone considers eBay to be a great platform anymore, but there's still 160 million eyeballs on there.
Yes.
And, you know, things sell themselves, to be honest.
Yes. It's absolutely crazy. So you have this phone business. And again, I can see how this just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the growth of the phone business. And what was that transition to whatever startup number two was, all the way to Sell Your Mac? Like, take us through that journey.
So when I came back from college, I was still technically looking for a finance job locally, basically because my parents were pushing me in that direction. So in my head, I had to prove that the phone business was viable and could be my life. And I made one great purchase off a car dealership of like 70 Nextel phones. This is by the first or second week I came back in town, and you know, made a few thousand dollars selling them just that week. So was kind of a turning point mentally that I knew this could be a business. And from there, I started going around to the malls and meeting all the salesmen at the kiosks there. One of them in particular, Brad, he really opened up his network on the internet and pushed me as the phone buyer to everyone. And within about a month, I had these reps hitting me up and coming to my place to sell me bags of phones that they had collected.
Oh my goodness.
And back then, the customers were trading in their phones for free. There wasn't a trading program at the Verizon store.
Oh wow.
So, you know, the rep takes the phone for free, comes to my apartment with 50 phones and walks out with, you know, $500-$600.
Oh my goodness.
So it was a huge win-win for everyone.
Unbelievable. And so let's put, again, a date stamp. So this is 2005.
This is now we're back in 2006, late 06.
Late 06.
You know, I was in my parents' basement selling these for a few months until I got kicked out for doing my eBay everywhere in the basement. My mom said I was taking over. So I had to go find my own place. And probably within, you know, I had a two-bedroom with a storage unit there. And within probably 6 months, you couldn't even like see across the living room and the dining room. Place was full of boxes of phones and chargers and cases. One of the learnings I'd like to pass on with that is kind of upselling your product. And just by slapping on a, you know, a 30-day warranty and a free car charger and a home charger and a case, I mean, increase the value, you know, exponentially.
Oh, packaging. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, pack it up.
And I think too, one of the things that that I love about this is that this is grassroots we're talking about, right? I mean, I know I said it in the intro, but for the listeners, I mean, we're talking to someone who was recognized by EY as an Entrepreneur of the Year candidate. So we're talking to someone who has built a business, and we're hearing the early days of his business, selling out of the basement, growing an electronics resale business, understanding the idea of how to buy low, sell high. I mean, the tricks and nuances of packaging and upselling. So, I mean, I hope listeners right now, what you are hearing is almost like a how-to book on how to make money, whether, again, you're looking to do this as a business or whether you're looking to fund something that you're doing or whether you're just looking to get rid of all your debt so that you can start your startup, right? Because debt is a ball and chain that will slow down anyone in progress. Whatever the purpose of it is, Brian is bringing to us such rich information. And so let's continue on with this journey. So now...
Yeah, I mean, talking about debt, this could be a great side hustle to pay down your debt. Just
100%.
Sell your stuff on eBay.
Oh my goodness, 100%. And Gary Vee talks a lot about that, right? I mean, Gary Vee, I mean, the guy's a multi-millionaire and he's still doing garage sales because he just loves selling on eBay and he loves that, right? So, I mean, again, if anyone out there thinks they're beneath the hustle, this is not the podcast for you. Let's just put that out there. So.
It's all about the hustle. If you don't have pig-headed determination and hustle, you're not going to make it as an entrepreneur. Yep.
And humility, right? Like you got to know when you have to reach out to people, you got to know that it doesn't come quick. And again, we're talking about your story in 2005, 2006, and we're sitting in 2019, right? So we're talking, you know, a good 13.
Jeez, has it been that long?
A good 13, 14 years, right? Time flies, man. A good 13, 14 years. And that's what I love about the startup story is that people tend to think now things happen like a light switch. You just turn it on, all of a sudden success hits. And I know within that journey, there nationally, we had an economic crisis in those 13, 14 years that I'm sure had an impact to your business. And maybe because of the place you stayed, maybe it was an uptick for your business, but I know there was an impact. So let's continue on this journey as you're moving from phone guy to sell your Mac. What were those next steps as you got kicked out of the basement?
At this point, I left the basement. I'm in my apartment selling the phones. And I did that for about another year and a half or so. And then I stumbled into a Mac deal. And it seems to be these things kind of just present themselves. And I've always been super passionate about Apple products. So it made sense that I would, you know, swoop up these Macs and try to resell them. So that first time I had, five Mac Pros, made some money on them. You know, I was like, I really love them selling the Macs. I should do more of that. So I started doing some arbitrage sales on eBay, you know, buying the Macs low, selling them high. The best times to buy these things were usually in the middle of the night, and I couldn't sleep. Over the course of the next 5 to 6 years, I probably was working until about 4 a.m. most nights. A lot of grinding. After a couple of years of not getting any sleep, I figured I needed to build an inbound sales channel, and that is really when SellYourMac.com was born. So I wanted to figure out a way, get people to a website, and they could trade in their Macs seamlessly, and I wouldn't have to be searching the internet trying to find them on a nightly basis.
And what was that inbound strategy early days? I mean, my mind thinks SEO, Google AdWords.
All SEO. 100%. Yeah, we built up a huge trove of Mac guides and just so much information that would lead people to the website.
What year was this now?
This is 2009.
So really, 2009, you were pushing content marketing before it was, really before it was a vocabulary word for most marketing.
I didn't know it was even called that.
Yeah, right? But that's what you were doing, right? You're providing all this value. Oh.
I got a great web guy. He understood it. So, you know, he helped me on that SEO journey. You know, we encoded the website correctly. You know, if you have the content, but it's not SEO specific terms, it's not going to work.
And how long was that when you started pushing out that content for inbound? How long until you started seeing some results?
I mean, results were starting to happen immediately, but within about 6 months, we were number one in the world for most Mac terms.
Really?
And we still hold that today. If you type in, you know, sell my Mac, we're number one in the world.
Oh my gosh. That is
a lot of traffic.
That is awesome. Oh my goodness. So that was 2009. The economy takes an absolute dump.
It was actually good for the business.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
People wanted to cash in their old MacBook Pros at that point. You know, they get $500 for them and they needed that money to, you know, pay their rent or send their kid to school.
Yeah.
The flip side, selling the used Macs was great because people didn't want to spend $2,000 on a new Mac. They were happy to spend $1,000 on one that was 2 years old.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So yeah, our business thrives in time of need.
I mean, it's funny, right? When we talk about your life in a compact time and space that we're having this conversation, your high school stock journey was about enduring and understanding this buy low, sell high. And now at that point, you know, 20 years later, your business is thriving in a similar environment when, you know, people are having a fire sale on things because really for a lot of people, including myself, the world was falling apart and we had to liquidate as much as we could.
I always offered a great value for people. You know, I never want to take advantage of anyone. Yeah. So we try to be, you know, one of the leaders in terms of price for trade-in.
Oh, and I love that. Again, you know, having gone through that season, we lost everything during those years. And so I remember as we were losing our house, taking the ceiling fans off so we could sell the ceiling fans on Craigslist to get $35. Like, I remember that period. So having a resource like yourself to sell off computer equipment, or, you know, again, everyone has electronics in their drawer that are just sitting there because they don't know what to do with it.
There are billions of devices in drawers and closets.
Yep.
People are still sometimes amazed. I hand them my card and they're like, I didn't know you could sell your Mac.
Oh my goodness.
People don't know there's these resources out there and they just haven't Googled it apparently.
Yeah. Oh man. So let's talk about the personal side of your entrepreneurial journey, because I don't want to get to sell your Mac just yet. I know we got there a little bit.
We touched
talked about the content marketing. We kind of teased it a bit, but I want to fully unpack it. But from the time that, and that's 2009 when Sell Your Mac is really starting to grow. Are you still single at the time? Were you married? Because now we have responsibilities that kind of layer onto the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
What was your personal life like in 2009?
I think I had a girlfriend at the time that did not live in town. I didn't meet my wife until 2010.
Okay.
Not having a serious relationship with someone that's staying at my house every day was helpful to grow the business.
Yeah.
Thinking about how busy I am now with 2 kids and my family, it would definitely not be as easy to start a business. Yeah. It doesn't mean it can't be done, but, you know, working till 4 a.m. doesn't happen if you have 2 kids at home.
That is 100% true. And I think that's a great message for the listeners in general, to seize the opportunity based on whatever season you're in.
Yeah.
Right?
When you have the time, go for it.
100%, right? Because things do get a little bit more complicated, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the stage you're in now. You know, you just had your second child. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Obviously, sleep is that commodity that there's not enough of. And so
I'd love to buy some more sleep.
Now, as an entrepreneur, what have you noticed shifting in the way you approach your business because of the personal responsibilities of a spouse and kids?
Probably a little bit less risky at this point, just to, you know, help protect my family and also the families of the team members here at my company. Overall, you know, very focused still on the growth aspects and stuff like that. So I don't think it changed entirely. Just having a more seasoned mindset, you know, more planning and budgeting at this point, just more of a framework around it. Back then, I was just running by the seat of my pants. I didn't really second guess any decision. I just went with everything. You know, now I have a team around me to bounce ideas off of and, you know, help kind of guide the path.
Awesome. That is awesome. So let's jump into the growth of Sell Your Mac, because again, you know, nominated by a global firm like Ernst & Young as Entrepreneur of the Year. And that's really how I came across you on LinkedIn, was seeing the announcement of your nomination. I thought, that's interesting. Sell Your Mac being nominated by Ernst & Young. Did a little bit of research, and it's an incredibly impressive business you have. And so I want to talk about that journey in growing to how you got to that national recognition, to being nominated for Entrepreneur of the Year. And so in 2009, you started pushing content marketing. You started having some volume with your inbound resources as well as your reselling outbound. What is the growth of Sell Your Mac, and what were some of the challenges early on as that growth took place? Because now you have employees, which early days you probably didn't.
Right.
So let's talk about some of the growth challenges you had with Sell Your Mac early on.
So at that point, we were about five people and we're working out of my basement. First of all, it was a hard just to get packages in and out of the house. You know, you're carrying these, lugging these things up and down the stairs and stuff like that. So just the challenges of not having a, you know, true warehouse and a Docker bay door to get items out. That was certainly tough. And, you know, one of the next things that happened to us was I had a cease and desist order from the city. They said you could only have one employee working out of your home.
Oh, wow.
So we had a, we had a kind of quickly scramble. I had 2 weeks to find a warehouse and get set up to keep the business going. So, you know, I reached out to a couple of friends I knew in real estate and, you know, found a 2000 square foot place, you know, pretty quickly. And, you know, we were set up within that 2 week period. So, you know, everything kept going and I, you know, kept my team together. But, you know, that was kind of one of the first points that the business, you know, could have folded in theory or had a, you know, major hiccup.
Before we continue on with Michael's startup story, I wanted to share about a great podcast app that pays you to listen to podcasts. I know it sounds insane, but it's true. I just discovered this free new app called Podcoin, and it literally pays you to listen to podcasts. And here's how it works. You listen to podcasts like the startup story, and you earn Podcoin while you listen. Then you turn that Podcoin in for gift cards or places like Amazon and Starbucks. Or if you're a person that would prefer to give rather than receive, you can even donate that Podcoin to charity. The more you listen, the more you earn. So here's what you do. You download Podcoin app right now on iPhone or Android, and I have a special code for you. Simply use the code STARTUPSTORY and you'll get 300 Podcoin just for signing up. Again, use the code STARTUPSTORY. And if you listen to enough of our episodes, you can get a Frappuccino at Starbucks. So yes, listening to Startup Story can actually get you a Frappuccino at Starbucks or an Amazon gift card. So go ahead and go listen to the Startup Story or virtually any podcast on Podcoin and sign up with the code STARTUPSTORY. I swear it'll change the way you listen to podcasts. Now let's jump back into Michael's startup story. As you're growing, I have to ask a question though, like how big is your business at this time? Because now I'm thinking, okay, now you've got a footprint, you've got five employees. I mean, this must be substantial and not just a couple units here or there. What volume are you pushing in this era when you get your own place?
I mean, at this point, we're probably just over 2,000 units a year. 2009, I think we did about $1 million in sales.
That is awesome. Are your parents still wishing you were a stockbroker at that time?
It took probably 2 years of me being my own until they stopped asking me about a job.
Did you ever find your ego to be a hindrance throughout that journey? Because I feel like for someone who is self-made, someone who's driven and ambitious, we can sometimes allow our ego to force us to run faster than we probably should. Was that ever an issue for you, or have you always been able to maintain a humble, a real spirit about it?
You know, it didn't really get in my way. It honestly just pushed me to work harder and work longer.
Okay.
And looking back, I'm not sure I should have foregone my sleep and health, but I did push myself to work till 4 a.m. to make sure my customer service was always on point. And the customer service really helped grow the business. You know, we're virtually 100% across the board on every single, you know, rating network there is. Without my ego telling me I needed to be number one, I probably wouldn't have worked as hard on the customer service aspects.
Oh, that's awesome. What a great perspective on how to leverage that. Because I know a lot of times the ego will force us to make decisions just to compete against someone that really, we're not running our own race anymore. We're trying to run someone else's. So that's a great way to harness that energy and that ego. So that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And so as the company grew, what were some of the challenges you had though? I mean, now, you know, again, you have your own footprint. We're talking 9 years in the making. And I have to believe there were some missteps in that. There were some challenges, some points of frustration, and maybe even...
There's a lot of missteps. I mean, you cannot go through life and not make mistakes as an entrepreneur. I mean, maybe by the time you've done your fourth or fifth business, you've learned a lot and you make less mistakes. But, you know, as a first time entrepreneur, I mean, there's mistakes around the corner every time. You just got to keep pushing past them.
When you look back now, you know, and again, we all have those scars. So when you look back on, let's say, the last 9 years, right, in this decade, what is one of the mistakes that was such a significant learning for you that has impacted the trajectory of your business?
Probably the biggest issue or mistake I had was prepaying for a very large phone deal that seemed 100% legitimate and everything checked out. But unfortunately, we never received the product that we paid for. And I had wired over $250,000 overseas secure this, you know, huge, huge phone deal. And, you know, after it didn't show up, you know, I was stressing out and the guy's telling me, oh, it's coming soon. He had a legitimate business. He was a well-respected member of the community. You know, nothing looked wrong, but unfortunately his phones never came. He tells me that, you know, he's the one that got screwed by the other business and he wasn't trying to hurt me, but, you know, unfortunately he did not refund my money. And oh my gosh. Ultimately hired a legal team overseas there and won the lawsuit and won triple damages, but this guy fled the country. So I've never seen a dollar of that.
Oh my goodness.
I've bootstrapped the business from day one. So I did not have the funds to really, you know, cover this expense. I had virtually lost everything that I'd worked for 5 years. So it was pretty rough.
What was your mindset during that time? Because that's a kick in the pants right there. Like that is a punch in the gut. I mean, I don't care how many cliches I can use. Like what was going on in your head at that time?
I couldn't sleep. I was having terrible nightmares. I was worried my life was coming to an end, that my business was going to go under, that I wasn't going to be able to continue as an entrepreneur. I thought I might have to go back and get a real job, which I really did not want to do. Mm. It was really scary.
How did you recover from it?
It definitely took some self-talk and, you know, family and stuff like that, you know, pushing me like, hey, Brian, you got this. You know, you can keep going. And ultimately just getting my head back on right and continuing to do what I loved and talk to people and make more Mac deals got above water, you know, for the next couple of years.
There's something you said in that I want to unpack because I feel like there's a lot more to it than just the few words that were inserted in there. And that's that the people you talked with, right? The family, and I'm assuming there's probably mentors in there or other community group. As we pause to reflect on that season, how critical were those people in your life during that season when you thought this was the end, this was the quits?
So critical. My parents were there for me, especially, you know, they've always been my biggest supporters. Without them kind of helping me out of that situation, I don't think I would be in business today. And that's really at the biggest turning point where things could have gone south.
And I want to talk about that because I think one of the things that entrepreneurs mistakenly believe is that you don't discuss challenges and weaknesses with other people, that you have to push through this yourself. When I think, obviously, social media and media outlets speak to all the success stories that are out there. And so the challenges and hardships of entrepreneurship really aren't shared a whole lot, unless you read a full-blown biography book.
Most people are not posting the failing stories.
You don't, right? And the reality is, on the other side of that hardship is an incredible growth opportunity for the entrepreneur learning, you know, who's sitting in the mess, but also the one hearing it. And that's why I love the startup story. And we just had Michael Littig on a week ago, you know, with the Zuckerberg Institute, and their entire premise is about creating community around entrepreneurship so that there are moments where other entrepreneurs can help pour into other entrepreneurs in those moments. Because aside from family and the people you shared with, you probably felt really alone because this was your business, right? I mean,
I feel like I did it to myself. You know, I was the only one to blame. I'm very critical of myself.
Yeah.
And especially in a time like that, I would beat myself up pretty bad.
And I love that you took that learning and kept going forward. You know, I think, again, I thank your community that poured into you during that season, because I know on my own journey how important my community was to me during mine. And so as you started recovering from that, and again, it's a scar that you'll carry forever. It always season and flavor your decision-making with other large deals, especially. How have you seen that season play out throughout Sell Your Max growth?
I've tried to protect myself in every deal since then. You know, I have contracts for these large deals. I won't pay for a deal overseas unless it's going to be on my Amex credit card, so I'm fully protected. So I kind of go to every length I possibly can to protect the business and my family now. And it stuck with me for so long. It took me over 5 years to pay off that debt. And last year I finally paid it off.
That's awesome.
It's crazy. I mean, because trying to, as I mentioned, I bootstrapped the business. So I'm constantly funneling back the profits to keep things growing at this rapid pace. So trying to pull out cash to pay off a $300,000 debt is tough.
Oh, man, I can feel this weight on my shoulders for you. Like, I'm just like, oh, man.
I'm kind of getting the tingles. I'm getting a little stressed out thinking about it.
So now let's talk about the growth of Sell Your Mac, right? Because I think I really do believe that that season strengthened you in such a huge way for the growth of Sell Your Mac. And again, the listeners know this conversation we're having right now is the first conversation we've had when it talks about Sell Your Mac. So again, me not being a journalist, I'm an entrepreneur. I know how that hardship strengthened you and created a determination in you once you got through the self-whipping that we all go through during that time.
Things seem less scary once you go through something like that. Yeah, small little issues, having a $1,000 error here and there doesn't seem like much in comparison. So you just keep forging ahead.
Yeah, it's all perspective, right? And I think you got a huge perspective learning early on. I think that was a tremendous blessing to you in spite of the hardship that it was, because now you have thicker skin, right? I mean,
very true.
So let's talk about the growth. What have you seen take place with Sell Your Mac over the last 5 years since that occurrence?
So, the Apple industry has grown a ton. The iPhone definitely helped spur a lot of Apple's growth. So we've kind of grown along with the Apple industry. I've been an Apple fanatic since I was very young. So being a part of that brand has really helped drive my passion as an entrepreneur. And I really think that is kind of key to the success, is that if I was selling something that I didn't love and wanted to share with others, I wouldn't be wanting to get out of bed in the morning. That has helped fuel the growth and help connect me with other like-minded people to bring on to my team. In the last 5 years, I've hired 5 people from the Apple Genius Bar.
Oh, wow.
And these people are also super passionate about Apple, obviously. So bringing more people into our space like that then connect with our, customers, certainly helps. So, I think it's that combination of having that Apple expertise and that passion and love for the brand that's kind of helped the growth from there.
Oh, that is awesome. How did you come across the EY nomination? That's a big deal. Getting nominated by a national firm. And again, and you're a small business. For those that are listening, every industry code has its own category of what a small business is. But really across any industry, 50 million is that threshold for a small business. So yes, you can be a $49 million company and still be considered a small business. and so how did you get the eyes from EY?
Well, someone nominated me last year and I went through the process and did not make it to the finalist level. So I, learned a little bit about the process back then, and I was re-nominated this year. A couple of the EY representatives come on site. They do a very in-depth interview. And from that review, you move on to the next stage. And then you have to do some, pretty serious kind of panelist interviews to see if you can make it to that finalist level. And they love my story and the growth that we've had. And I think the combination of the growth and the kind of, just continuing to drive this business forward despite all the hardships, I think that definitely played a part into it. And yeah, it's been a fun journey. So they picked up on that and ultimately made it to the finalist level. You know, I didn't win. There was a bunch of amazing candidates out there. So, you know, no surprise. We can try again next year.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And I know there's another award on the horizon that we can't speak to right now because of timing. But I know for all the listeners, don't worry, in a couple of weeks, I will be promoting it via social media. So you'll definitely hear about what's going on with Sell Your Mac at a national level once again. They're doing amazing things.
It's kind of been the year of awards. I feel like I have so many things to announce right now. I got finalists for two more awards, you know, a week ago. I'm trying to space out these announcements. This doesn't seem like we're going too crazy here, but, you know, we're kind of firing all cylinders.
But now you're 14. Would you say what Sell Your Mac is, what, 14 years old?
Oh, Sell Your Mac was born in 2009.
2009. Okay, so you're 10 years old this year.
The 3 years before that was more the phone selling.
Got it. So Sell Your Mac is 10 years old. And within just the first couple of years, you were doing 1,000 units. I forget the dollar you said, but...
Started around 1 million back then.
So now at 10 years, how many units are you pushing a year?
Last year, we did... a little over 25,000 units.
25,000 units. That is unbelievable. When you started this, could you imagine that type of volume?
I think I knew I had potential to grow the business pretty large, but I didn't really know how fast it could grow or how big it could get. I do feel at this point that we're honestly scraping the surface.
Really?
I think we're probably 1% of how much we could, you know, handle. And, you know, obviously it'd be take a long time to grow that much more. But I think that is the potential out there. There's tons of large companies in our space, you know, in the recycling industry, for instance, that don't offer great value, but they have the relationships.
Yeah.
So I think that if we focus more on, you know, larger deals, corporate clients and stuff like that, that we could significantly grow the business in the near future.
That is awesome. I love that. If we were to do a Where Are They Now episode in 3 years, what is the update on Sell Your Mac that you think you'll be giving in 3 years from now? What do you got? Unit-wise, employee headcount, maybe some new verticals. What are your thoughts on what Sell Your Mac looks like in 3 years?
3 years, we're probably 40 to 50 employees doing $25, $30 million in a gorgeous building where you can see the light. And we have tons of very passionate Apple team members. And we're in similar verticals, but doing a lot more on the corporate side and kind of educating these Fortune 500 companies about the life cycle of their Apple products and making sure they can stay up to date, you know, with the cost-effective solution. I see myself, you know, working more directly with the C-suite to help educate them in that. And ultimately give them great value back for their Apple stuff. And I think that they'll love to talk to me because I'm passionate about it. And hopefully they see some good dollars back in their business when they trade them in.
Oh, that is awesome. What are your challenges now that the company is 10 years old that really were not a challenge in the first couple of years? Like what are the things that keep you up now?
Personally, just trying to manage the business, you know, being a more of a true entrepreneur, I don't think I have a lot of great managerial skills, nor do I like it. And with a growing team, it is tough. And, you know, I'm a people person, but I don't like getting into the details of, you know, how I'll handle all the, you know, people problems, people opportunities. And, you know, as you grow, there's so much more, you know, kind of red tape to deal with. And so it makes it not fun.
Yeah.
So trying to inject more fun back into the business, that is something that I'm like working on all the time, but it is a challenge.
As you, in 3 years, when you're looking at 50 employees, I mean, the culture is going to be so important in order for
so key.
Employee retention. So, and these are things that entrepreneurs need to think of, right? I mean, we have our strengths and it's about staffing to help backfill our weaknesses. And so I know you will nail that in your, as you continue to grow and you start looking to hire those, the culture and people person.
The culture, definitely, I've been very more mindful in the last 5 years compared to when we started. You know, when you start, you kind of just need people to help out. You're not necessarily hiring for culture fit. But at this point, if you're not a culture fit, there's no way we're going to bring you on.
Yeah.
You have to be passionate about Apple. You have to be willing to talk to our customers about Apple products.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I love this. I love our founder stories. I feel like I can always sit with them so much longer than the hour long episode, but they always do have to come to an end. And there's two questions that I ask all founders that are on the Startup Story. And I think they're so critical. And really, If I had to synthesize the startup story down to 20 minutes, obviously we would accelerate the entrepreneurial journey side of the story, but we would always have these two questions because of how key they are. And the first one's about gratitude, right? You have had an incredible journey and many people have poured into your journey and to help contribute to where you are today. And I believe that if we forget those people that have contributed, we'll begin to isolate ourselves because we think it's all our own effort. And inevitably that will lead to our failure. And so when you think back to on your journey, who do you point to with such immense gratitude for their contribution to your journey?
Started with my family. You know, I wouldn't be the man I am today without following my parents and the examples that they've set. They've helped me out in my dire times of need, you know, when I've been frauded. Beyond my family, I would say my team. You know, I still have three of my early team members here today. They're on my executive team now. They've worked tirelessly to help keep the lights on and keep things growing over the years. And honestly, without their support, we wouldn't be where we are today.
That is awesome. And the last question that, we've been talking to tens of thousands of listeners as we share your story, as we've been speaking to just a broad audience. But right now I want you to speak to just one listener, right? This is just you having a coffee chat with one of the entrepreneurs or wantrepreneurs that are listening. And again, and maybe the person that you want to speak to is an existing entrepreneur, but is incredibly frustrated with the lack of traction and growth. And maybe they've had a gut punch like you went through or losing $250,000, but they haven't recovered from that. Or maybe you want to talk to the entrepreneur who's been defeated time and time again about really call it quits and they aren't sure what they're going to do with their life. Or maybe that wantrepreneur, whatever the persona is that you want to speak to, I want you to just have this chat with that one person. And what do you have to say to that person?
I will tell you to find your passion. If you are working on something you're very passionate about, it's not going to feel like work anymore. And you'll push ahead and work tirelessly on that passion project. And if you can turn that passion into an opportunity to, you know, bring wealth to your family and to bring happiness to others, that will ultimately, you know, bring you true happiness. And it takes a lot of pig-headed determination to get there. And I would not be where I am today unless I had literally worked my butt off year in and year out. These awards did not come in the first 10 years. So it takes a long time to feel like you've really achieved something. If you're doing it for your own ego, it's not gonna happen. You have to really be passionate and love what you do. So find something you love and it'll bring you happiness in life.
Listening to Brian's startup story reminds me of all the ways there are to make money. While Brian has built an entire business generating tens of millions of dollars selling used Apple products on eBay, now that may not be your method, but it goes to show what is possible. One of the things Brian and I discussed was that how much of a burden debt can play when desiring to launch your business. There are so many challenges that come from launching a new business. A concern of debt should not be one of them. Oftentimes I hear from entrepreneurs that they would love to start a business, but it's their debt that holds them back. Hearing Brian's story about selling beaded jewelry as a kid or selling cell phones in college are just a few examples of how we can create an income source for ourselves to pay down the debt that is stopping you from moving forward on your business ideas. In fact, Gary Vaynerchuk is a multi-millionaire who still hits up garage sales and collects baseball cards for the sole purpose of reselling them. Oftentimes, he resells them on eBay. If an individual worth hundreds of millions of dollars doesn't find garage sale arbitrage to be beneath him, why would you turn your nose to it? The truth is simple. If you want to make money to pay down debt so you can launch your business or fund your startup, there are numerous ways to do so. It just requires intention. Until you act on a truth that you learn, it is simply academic. Once you act on it, that is when it becomes real. I hope you found value in Brian's startup story, and I hope you found it encouraging and insightful. If you've been around the startup story for any length of time, then you know how much emphasis I put on the idea that entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So if you did find value from Brian's startup story and want to make some extra money selling those used Apple products laying around your house, then make sure to visit sellyourmac.com/startup story. You'll receive an additional $10 bonus when you sell your item with him. There are hundreds of millions of used gear pieces around our home, ready to be sold for some extra cash. So help support our featured founder, Brian Burke, and visit sellyourmac.com/startup story to sell your Apple products. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So let's make sure to show up for Brian and sellyourmac.com in a very big way. And now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible about sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We too are a startup, and word of mouth is everything. So please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Startup Story, or on Twitter at Startup Story _. If you're on LinkedIn, please search for The Startup Story and follow our company page. LinkedIn is a really powerful way to raise awareness of the show. But the most impactful way you can help us grow our audience is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Or if you listen to the show via Spotify, then please simply share the podcast directly from your Spotify app or wherever you listen to the show. These simple actions can make a huge impact in getting these amazing founder stories out to the masses. And please make sure to tag or mention The Startup Story when you do share so that we can connect with you and say thank you directly. I'm so incredibly appreciative of the fact that you listen to this show each and every week. And I look forward to sharing these amazing stories with you every Tuesday with hopes of encouraging and inspiring you to start your story. If you like this podcast and are thinking of creating your own, consider talking to my producer, Danny Osmond. He helps thought leaders, influencers, executives, and authors create, launch, and produce podcasts that grow their business and make a real impact in this world. You can contact him today at emeraldcitypro.com/startup story.